A couple of weeks ago, I began my sermon. I talked a little bit about Elton John. And he talked about the fact that some of the three hardest words to say are, "I need help." Some of you were here, some of you might not have been. You can catch it up online. I'm in a place that I might, after what I shared with you at announcements regarding what's going on in my life, that I might need some help. I don't know what that means. And I certainly could see where me saying that today after the news I've brought to you this week, you may be like, well, you're on your own. I get that. But there's some uncertainty in the Bergeron household, which brings some amount of fear. And so I leave that with you, that I cover your prayers for health. Now, that has nothing to do with the message today, but I wanted to share it because I know things get in the way. Things get in the way and distract us from our faith. And that's what I want to talk about today. I'm not going to talk about all of this parable, but I'm going to talk a little bit about the rich man and Lazarus, but not the whole thing. There's just too much there. And it comes up every 3 years in our prescribed readings. And you've been with me long enough that you know that sometimes I follow what we call the lectionary and sometimes we don't. But this one I try to preach on because it's just an odd duck parable. I just feel like I want to talk about it because it's a challenging parable. And I was thinking about this rich man and Lazarus, and it's out of Luke 16, and I'll get to the story in a little bit. And I was thinking about really rich people, and I remember a few years ago when a few of us from our family went down to L.A., and we went for the first time to the Getty Museum. And it's just this phenomenal museum. Like, the museum buildings itself rival what's inside. And as we're going through, I realized, and they said, well, this was only part of our collection. There's another Getty Museum called the Getty Villa that houses all the Grecian and Roman artifacts. So I got to get down there and see that someday. But as wonderful as these places are, if you haven't been, it's worth a trip. I started looking into the person who put all this money away for his art collection and for it to be displayed, J. Paul Getty. And you'd think, well, if he's doing these kinds of humanitarian kind of things for the betterment of society, he must be a great person. Not so much, if you did not know. He did give some great business advice back when he was alive, and it was this: my formula for success is rise early, work late, and strike oil. That is, so if y'all want to know a perfect plan for making it rich, there it is. But you got to know that his father bankrolled him, and he built on that, but he really, in terms of relationships, was really bankrupt. He once said this, quote, "A lasting relationship with a woman is only possible if you're a failure in business." Kind of gives you a feel for J. Paul Getty. Last year, there was a movie about him revolving around the story of his grandson who was ransomed. And so when his grandson was ransomed, they asked for a large amount of money. And J. Paul Getty's son asked his dad, J. Paul Getty, for money to pay the ransom. And he refused. He said, "I'm not going to pay that kind of money." Later on, he did some negotiating. And he said, "I'd be willing to pay up to $2.2 million for this ransom because that would be tax deductible." Later on, he did lend his son some money to cover this lower ransom, but when he gave his son that money, it was a loan with interest so that his grandson could get out of being captive. Wealth can get in the way of the most important things. And the good news is I will never have to worry about that. I will never have to discover what that feels like. But I'm going to tell you that we could back up a little bit. Anything can become a distraction to the most important things. Anything. But there's a fable about a rabbi, an old folk tale that I want to tell you that relates to this story. And there's this old rabbi, and this rich, miserable man comes to see this rabbi. And the rabbi, knowing this man's disposition and the way he is, takes him by the hand and he leads him to a window and he says to him, "Look out into the street and what do you see?" And this man says, "I see men, I see women, I see children." And again, the rabbi takes him by the hand and this time he leads him to a mirror and he says to him, "Now what do you see?" The man replies, "Now I only see myself." And the rabbi explains to him, he says, "Look, in the window there is glass, and in the mirror there is glass. But the glass in the mirror is covered with a little bit of silver. And no sooner than when you add silver, that all windows become mirrors, and you cease to see others, and you only see yourself." And it makes you think. I mean, even Jesus, within Luke 16, so this whole chapter, Jesus is talking a little bit about money, and he says, no one can serve two masters. Now, he relates that to wealth, but it applies to just about anything. You can't serve two masters without it causing friction. When Paul wrote to his protege Timothy, he said, "Look, people want to get rich and fall into the temptation and trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction." Now, you got to know, the Bible's not picking on rich people. I don't want you to hear that. The larger spiritual truth of all of this, including the entire chapter of Luke 16, is that things can distract you from the love of Jesus. And when something gets in the way, trouble often follows. Anxiety follows. Worry follows. I mean, when we magnify a part of our life and make it so big that actually deserves less attention, we stop seeing the grace of God in and amongst us because we separate ourselves. So we hear several parables, well, at least two parables in Luke 16 about this, but the one that we're looking at today is this one about this rich man and Lazarus. And the one just right before that, by the way, it has this weird summation. I mean, let me just read you the summation of the previous parable in the same chapter. Jesus says, "I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings." Now, he's not saying buy friends. He's not saying bribe your friends into believing in Jesus, but he's saying be generous with what you have so that they may see the love of God within you and might possibly take a leap of faith. This is all about keeping the main thing the main thing. And the main thing is Jesus. I mean, that's why the cross stands here for us, bigger than anything else, to remind us the main thing is always about the love of Jesus. But I also think the old adage still applies, you can't take it with you either. So Jesus, in this teaching moment where he's talking about various things and it's related to wealth, he wants to make it so clear that we shouldn't get distracted that he actually uses in this story, this parable, eternity as a backdrop so that we see how important the point that Jesus, the point that he's making is so important. But here's the thing. Because this is an odd duck story, I just need to remind you that parables are not analogies. Analogies have like direct connection. Well, this means this, and this means this, and this means this. Parables are elusive. Parables have multiple meanings. Parables live in the gray where analogies are very black and white. And often in parables, they are not meant to be taken literally. And you'll see what I mean in a little bit. But all this boils down to is to be vigilant about the most important things in life. Our relationships and the love of God in our lives. I mean, Jesus is talking about wealth, but it really could be anything. So Jesus is encouraging us to guard our hearts and minds. especially as it relates to the pursuit of more, but it really can be anything. Because remember, you make a living by what you earn, but you make a life by what you give. I mean, I'm telling you, distractions can get in the way. I mean, I'm in a point now that what I announced to you at the very beginning of announcements could totally distract me from staying connected to Jesus. It's a pothole. It's a wide hole in the road. And if I wasn't vigilant, I could focus all my energy there on what is to come and what I told you about and how we take care of that versus inviting Jesus in to be a part of that and to walk with us because he wants to. But when something bad happens, our minds go to that thing and we just focus on it. And so even in this moment, I have to be reminded and remind myself that I got to invite Jesus into what is to come in this journey that I must take with my wife. It's scary stuff. But the story begins this way. Let me, enough of that. There's a rich guy and there's a really poor guy. Jesus names the poor guy Lazarus. The rich guy has no name, which might tell you who we should focus in on. And on top of that, the name Lazarus, a common name, but it's the Greek version of the Jewish name Eliezer, which means whom God has helped. So I think we know where our focus is on the one whom God helps. Now, this contrast between these two is so great, it's exaggerated, because Jesus is telling a story. He says, the rich guy wears purple. And you think, well, so what? Purple was like the most expensive dye of that time. Took sea snails and boiling it in a lead pot and hours of cooking and bad smells, and you finally get this purple dye. Synthetic purple wasn't even found and discovered until 1850. So this was like Phoenician purple. That's one of the names, or Tyrian purple. And this guy was so rich, he could afford to wear purple. The only people who could afford to wear purple were kings and very rich people. Now, on the other hand, Lazarus, this guy, was so poor, and he was such a beggar. He didn't wear purple. Instead, he had dogs who would lick his sores. That's a bad thing. But here's the deal. Lazarus, the poor man, laid at the gates of the rich guy. This rich guy wearing purple would have to walk by him or even over him on a regular basis. He could see Lazarus' needs, and by implication and what is unsaid, this guy did nothing. So remember that. The rich guy turned a blind eye to a problem literally at his feet. So the story goes, now that we have this set up, Lazarus dies, and it says the angels carried him to Abraham's side. Which was, in those times, that was kind of a standard view, is that in the afterlife, if there was an afterlife, now that wasn't a consensus thing, but if there was an afterlife, someone by the name of Abraham, the patriarch, the father of all Israel, would intercede on behalf of good people and bring them to something called Abraham's bosom. I mean, that was just how they said it. But, we used to sing a song like that in Sunday school. We giggle when we sang it. But ultimately, it was about finding a place of rest, a place of eternal rest. And there's even art that depicts this. It was like someone holding their child in their lap, like when a child falls asleep and the parents hold it. It's like that. And so this imagery of rest and being cared for and no problems because you were leaning up against the father of all Israel. And it's not unlike being invited to a meal in those times. And if you were the guest of honor, you would sit right next to the host so close that you could rub elbows, that you could lean up against them. If you look at the Da Vinci Last Supper, you got John kind of leaning against Jesus. So it's a place of comfort, a place of safety, a place of rest. And that's what Lazarus, who's had this terrible life, has found. Now, if we add to that image, we know that Jesus talks about this place of eternal rest too in a lot of his teachings. And we are reminded even last week when we talked about lost people. Jesus says when someone repents, when someone comes close, he says, we have a party in heaven and all I can think of is potlucks. Imagine a banquet in heaven would beat any potluck we have here by a hundredfold, right? But also, did you know this, that food tastes better when you're with people you like? Food tastes better when you're having a good time. So imagine having a meal in a place with all your favorite people, where there's no worries, there's no pain, there is no sadness. Everything that stresses you out, it's just gone. That is the image of heaven. Sharing a meal. Never tired, never sick, never worried. And this is where Lazarus is at. Now, on the other side, so we keep going back and forth. The rich man, it says this, the rich man also died, period, in hell, dot, dot, like this escalates quickly. Like, oh, this great heaven, and the rich man is in hell. Now, here's why I reminded you that this is a parable and not an analogy, because without any theological work done within the story, what you would deduce is, all rich people go to hell and all poor people go to heaven. Like there's the story, amen, let's go home. And if that were true, we're all in big trouble because compared to the rest of the world, we're pretty rich, no matter what our economic bracket is. But this is a parable. And it is a reminder to us about how we treat others and how we let distractions get in the way. So this rich man realizes he's stuck, right? He just knows he's stuck. He can't do anything. He knows that there's this permanent chasm between eternity, between heaven and hell. And so instead he says, look, can I have a little favor? It's really hot down here. Can I have a little water? He says to Abraham, let Lazarus, the guy who sat at my gates, who I stepped over, let him dip his finger in water and just come down and just like, And Abraham says, that's not possible. Because there's no way between the two places. And then he goes on to say, he's like, look, you had a good life, and Lazarus, who's up here with me, had a bad life. And without saying it, he says, you ignored Lazarus your entire adult life, and his needs were right there at your front gate, right at your feet, and you ignored the need right in front of you. To me, this is the biggest part of the story that informs so much of what's going on, is that what you didn't do matters. Now don't draw the conclusion of, oh, if I don't, I'm going to hell. It's not that. But when we get distracted, when we worry more about ourselves than those around you, we're missing a piece. There are times when we need to worry about ourselves. Don't say we don't do that. But when we don't keep in balance the needs of the community versus the needs of the individual, we get so distracted that the silver we have turns all of our windows into mirrors and we're only looking at me, me, me. That's the thing. And that's really the thing that part of this story, like I said, this parable is big and there's lots of moving parts and there's other interpretations in this too. So I'm just giving you one little slice of this thing. But it's a reminder that it's easy to get self-centered. It's easy to get caught up in one thing and me, 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 and I. So let me ask, it's a rhetorical question. What is distracting you from greater faith in Jesus? And from what I know, just generally speaking, I'm going to say that just generally speaking, I don't think it's money. It's not money that's distracting you from Jesus unless it's making sure that you have enough to provide for your family. But distractions are all around. Sometimes life kind of starts with one small thing, and then you add another small thing, and then you add another small thing, and another small thing. And all of a sudden, it's not one thing, but it's a bunch of stuff, and all of a sudden, I'm totally distracted from the most important things. Sometimes it's one big thing. We lose perspective, whether it's inch by inch or all at once. And I've seen both in my life. And I've just had another one that could serve as a distraction. And one of the things I'm really worried about, because of the change that is afoot, that I could be a distraction. It's the last thing I want to be, is a distraction to your faith. So don't lose perspective. Jesus isn't going anywhere. As Dave Larson pointed out to me earlier this week, he said, look, Jesus is still the captain of this ship and will always be here. And with that, I say, amen.